Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
One pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today, everybody. It is Monday. We are getting ready for week three or week two, depending on your scoring periods. I am Adam Azer with Scott White. It is a Team Scam show. Good morning, Scott White. Happy Monday, sir.
Happy Monday to you, too.
Yeah, very happy Monday. Team Scam won, went 6-4. That was beautiful. Last week, a week ago, we were talking a lot about pitchers, be it Stallions or Brewers or whoever. I feel like this was a hitter-friendly weekend. I feel like this weekend was about the hitters.
Yeah, a little bit more so. I added a couple more in deeper leagues, but there were a couple that I added when I've mostly been making moves for pitchers so far, so
right.
I agree with that.
Yeah, right. It's time to get those hitters now. Why is Yandy Diaz owned in every one of my leagues? He is the one hitter that I really want. He's only like 50% owned, but he's 100% owned in Adam Azer leagues, but I hope you have the opportunity to pick him up. Who are some standouts for you this weekend? I actually had trouble with this. Like one guy that like totally jumped out. Holy cow. Got to get this guy. I didn't really know who it was or even someone who's widely owned. You got a standout for us, Scott?
I want to talk about Jason Hayward a little because he did have a huge weekend at Milwaukee. 3 home runs, including 2 in one game, in which he also stole 2 bases. And of course, it was just a few years ago that he was considered this must-start outfielder, still only 29. I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical that anything's really changed here. His problem has always been elevating the ball, and if you look at the 3 home runs he hit, it was in Milwaukee, first of all, great place to hit. One of them was like a line drive shot, and another was a high fly ball that just barely cleared the fence. You know, there was a leaping try at the wall to catch it. So I don't know that it means anything, but I did add him in a couple of 5 outfielder leagues just because, but a couple 5 outfielder 15 team leagues. Because it's hard to fill 5 outfield spots with competent bats there. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not optimistic, but maybe.
Okay. As long as we're talking about 15 team 5 outfielder leagues, because I was like, really? We're starting the show with Jason Hayward? That's, you know.
Big weekend. What do you want? Standouts.
I know. It was not a weekend with an obvious standout, in my opinion. I want, you know, one guy that really jumped out to me was Joe Musgrove. And I know that's kind of random. But he's about 84, 86% owned, something like that. And I don't know if Joe Musgrove is a must-own player or if he is someone that we can be streaming, adding and dropping as we see fit. Obviously, fantasy owners think he's a must-own player. But he had a great start. Yeah. I'm kind of skeptical, but I understand why he needs to be owned. How do you feel about Joe Musgrove?
No, I think he's definitely must-own. I think he's going to – he's just such an efficient pitcher. I think he threw like 72% of his pitches in this start for strikes that he's, I think, going to be a quality start machine for the Pirates. The ERA was a little on the high side last year, but he showed a lot of swing and miss potential and certainly did in this first start too. Trying to find the exact stat I have for him, but it was a high number of swinging strikes. It equaled
17.
His high from last year, 17 of them. Yeah.
17, yeah, on 88 pitches. And he did it against the Reds, who can't really hit, but still, you know, the first 14 starts of last year, he had a 3.31 ERA. Last 5 starts, 6.35 ERA. But, you know, that's only 5 starts. It was a pretty solid season for him. He had a 1.18 whip. All right, so that's my, I don't know why I said him. Okay, we can do better. Scott, Clayton Kershaw, not a weekend standout,
okay.
But I want to bring something up. He's making a rehab start, I think, tomorrow, and he could pitch this weekend for the Dodgers. What do you think about this? We got some excitement going for Clayton Kershaw. He already had his DL stint. He's going to have another DL stint. Last time we saw him pitch was the postseason. He was kind of up and down, hit or miss. Not exactly like Clayton Kershaw. I think this might be a time to make some offers if you have Clayton Kershaw and maybe sell high on him before he even debuts in 2019. How about that, Scott White? What do you think? And if you were going to do that, what would be selling high for Clayton Kershaw?
I mean, that's a take. I don't know.
That's what I do.
I mean, we could see. I could look at ADP data and see how the general public was viewing him coming into the season. I guess for much of draft season, there was the expectation he would begin the year on the DL. But I know, you know, we were obviously drafting all off season, and Clayton Kershaw never went that high, at least among ace pitchers. I don't give up an ace without getting an ace in return. Generally speaking, I might downgrade an ace, but I'm not going to upgrade it. I'm not going to just rid myself of an ace, because I think that's the scarcest, one of the scarcest, most valuable commodities.
Okay, but would you trade him for Chris Sale?
I would, yeah. I would trade him for Chris Sale. Maybe that might be, it's more of a buy low situation on Sale than I think a sell high with Kershaw, but sure, I would do that.
All right, because I'm really considering it, as I have Kershaw coming back in one of my leagues, and I just don't know what to expect, and I don't think this is the last time he's going on the injured list. I'm nervous about his back holding up. It's scary that he already had an injury in spring training. I'm not sure we downgraded him enough, but then again, he's Clayton Kershaw. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the best pitcher I've ever seen, basically. So you don't want to count the guy out. Let's see what happens.
My impression of the way draft prep season unfolded is before he went on the DL, yeah, I didn't want anything to do with him. And then he went on the DL and started dropping more to like round 6-7. And to me, he became a value at that point. Maybe we were downgrading him too much. So we'll see.
Okay, so Kershaw could pitch this weekend in the bigs, but I do not start him. First of all, we don't know that he's going to pitch, and secondly, it's just a little bit too risky. Let's talk about some of the ad drops that we made this weekend, and maybe this will help us get to some standouts. I added Hector Neris on a $5 bid out of a $100 budget. I had 85 left, now I have 80. And I missed out on Ryan Brazier last week because I didn't go to like $3, and I was mad at myself. Brazier got a save yesterday. He now has 2 to Matt Barnes's 1. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But I added Hector Neris. And the reason why I added Hector Neris, he got the save yesterday for the Phillies. I dropped Andrew Miller. You know, Hector Neris has been a really good reliever. First half of last year, he was terrible. And then they sent him down. He came back up, and his last 20 appearances, he had a 2.04 ERA, 5 walks, a 35 strikeouts, and 17 and 2/3. The two previous seasons, 2016 and 17, 2.71 ERA, 188 strikeouts and 155 innings and a 1.18 whip. So I think he's good. I think Neris has a chance to become the primary saves guy. We're not there yet, but I did add him. And what's your read? Any bullpens you think that, you know, switched this weekend? Red Sox, Phillies?
Man, it's playing out exactly like we feared it would for bullpens across baseball. The by committee approach to the ninth inning seems to be gaining steam. It's usually not like a true full committee. It's usually between two guys, but that makes the ones who have a firm hold on the ninth inning job that much more valuable. It's really like a third of the league. Like we don't really know who the Twins closer is, or the Phillies, or the Red Sox, or the Rays, or the Braves. You know,
I think
probably come up with a few more names.
Okay, I'm going to sound stupid the next time they get a save chance, but I really think Blake Parker is certainly the guy to own. And Trevor May has not really been in the mix. So you had Rogers. I could see Rogers getting a save if there are a bunch of lefties up. Otherwise, I really think it's Parker.
I mean, there's definitely, in all those situations, we could name a preference, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'm counting on that preference for more than like 60%. Of the team's share.
Sure.
It's going to be tough to get 30 saves.
And the reason why I picked Neris up, because I agree with everything you're saying, is if you're going to pick up a guy that you're speculating could get saves, make sure he's a guy that even if he doesn't get saves, he's not going to hurt you in your lineup. You know? So Neris is a good pitcher. So even if he doesn't get me saves, hopefully he does, but he'll give me some ERA, some whip, and some strikeouts. He's not a hater or anything like that, but. And that's another, we got to talk about Jeremy Jeffress, he's coming back. But would you rather have Brazier or Barnes? Would you rather have Robertson or Neris? Would you rather have Brazier or Barnes?
I would I mean, I guess I'd have to say Brazier at this point, since he's got two of the three. I don't think Barnes is out of it, but it does seem like they like him in more of a Hader role, Josh Hader role, than as a ninth inning guy. And then the other one was Robertson and Neris. I still go Robertson there. I mean, that bullpen might be the truest of committees in terms of it could just be anybody any day. But that would lead me to favor who I consider the best reliever still. And Robertson's last couple of appearances have gone better. Obviously, he got off to a terrible start. But I'd still lean Robertson there. And I'd still go with Sir Anthony Dominguez over Neris if I was ranking them. But it's who knows? You know, Gabe Kapler's he's a wild man when it comes to his bullpen usage.
I'm going to go through a few more of my ad drops, and I'll let Scott take it away. I added Jay Bruce in, I think, two leagues, and he just has to be owned at this point. And I added Jock Peterson in a 12-team points league. Now, I know, Scott, Jock Peterson was not in your sleeper hitters column. He was too owned. I was lucky to get him. But listen, the guy's got 7 righties this week. That could be 7 leadoff spots for Jock Peterson for the best lineup in baseball right now. Not a lot of good pitchers this week, so he, to me, is a must-start guy this week, Jock Peterson. I dropped Lucas Giolito in several leagues, unfortunately. Scott and I added Daniel Vogelbach in a 16-team head-to-head categories league. We dropped Greg Bird. Vogelbach is not an everyday player, but you're feeling, you know, he's like 15% owned. You think Dan Vogelbach needs some attention.
I mean, I've been warm on Vogelbach for a few years and been hoping he'd get his chance now. It seemed like an injury, a minor injury to Edwin Encarnacion, gave him a small opening this week, and boy, has he run with it. I mean, the biggest game was yesterday when Edwin Encarnacion was also in the lineup, got a start at first base. Jay Bruce got a day off, and Vogelbach had 2 homers, 6 RBI already. 4 home runs, basically. He started 4 of the past 6 games. And I think they have a bit of a good problem on their hands now, because it's clear Vogelbach, who you might remember was a standout in spring last year, a guy with great on-base skills. I think there's like a Max Muncy type ceiling here for Vogelbach, and he's pushing for playing time in a way he hasn't before. Because Jay Bruce can flip between first base and outfield, I think there's room for him, the Mariners, to work Vogelbach in. And obviously, if an injury develops, if Santana gets hurt, Malik Smith gets hurt again, then Vogelbach becomes a very interesting player to own. I added him in a couple leagues. One was a 16-teamer, like you said. The other was my Tout Wars league, which is a 15-team roto. So we're talking deep leagues where I added him. But I don't think there's any issue speculating on upside in a format like that.
We also added Clint Frazier and dropped Teoscar Hernandez in that same, that's the podcast for the People League, 16-team head-to-head categories. And people are asking about Clint Frazier. I think one thing you have to realize with Frazier, he had a 3-run homer on Saturday. He didn't start that game. I don't think they love his defense in left field. The other thing is, you know, could be short stay with Aaron Hicks, hopefully back in a couple weeks. The other thing is the Yankees have faced nothing but bad pitching so far this year, so keep that in mind. You look at Gary Sanchez, for example. And the other thing is, actually a good thing, Clint Frazier was at one point a huge prospect and now is finally hopefully getting some everyday playing time. The schedule is going to get a lot tougher for them this week because they're at the Astros this week, beginning today with Verlander. So how owned do you think Clint Frazier could be? Do you think he's a must-own?
No, I don't think must-own. It's again, how deep is your league? How able are you to speculate on upside with your bench spots? And there's been a lot of talk. I've written about it. We talked about somebody like Jesse Winker, who, I wasn't alone. I was maybe leading the parade, but in terms of the upside he has, and obviously off to a dreadful start for the Reds. And is he somebody who's droppable? And yeah, there's a case to be made that he is in like shallower 3 outfielder leagues, not the kind of leagues where we're talking about, where I've talked about adding a Vogelbach or a Hayward. So, you know, in the kind of leagues where you're considering dropping Winker, I don't think those are the kind where you add Frazier. I think it's more of a 5 outfielder league scenario, which tends to be more of a roto league where you're not investing. You're not so invested in filling your bench with starting pitchers because playing the 2 start weeks isn't as big of a deal. So that's kind of where I am with Frazier. Again, I'm excited about it. It looks like he's finally taking advantage of his opportunities, kind of like Vogelbach, but there are questions about what kind of playing time is going to be available to him going forward.
Would you pick up Clint Frazier or Jason Hayward?
In the leagues where I was putting in bids on Hayward, which are, again, they were 5 outfielder, 15 team leagues, I put in a bigger bid for Hayward than Frazier.
I should take it back, because yes, Aaron Hicks is coming back, hopefully in the next couple weeks, maybe. But Stanton's still going to miss more time than that. Gardner can't really hit. If Clint Frazier hits, he'll probably play. Okay, there's that. We also added Merrill Kelly. Merrill Kelly had a great start for the Diamondbacks against the Red Sox yesterday. Scott and I added him, and we dropped Lucas Giolito. And 8 innings, 9 strikeouts, only 1 run allowed, and Adam Jones should have caught that ball! Oh, just over the outstretched arms, and a home run for Mitch Moreland. Merrill Kelly, Scott, how owned should he be?
Yeah, I'm not super excited about him. I thought it was fine adding him in the league we did for having 9 strikeouts in 8 innings, only 11 swinging strikes, so doesn't really seem to have an overpowering pitch, but he does have 4 pitches, and he was throwing 200 innings when he was pitching in Korea the past 3 years. So, you know, if he's efficient like this, I think they'll let him accumulate innings. He could be a useful innings eater in a deeper league scenario. I don't see a ton of upside here, but just the ability to accumulate innings is pretty rare among pitchers these days, and I think that could have value in its own right.
And that would be the end of my somewhat boring ad drop weekend. Scott, how was your actual weekend? Did you do anything fun?
I've been binging Game of Thrones. I haven't seen any of it before.
Yes!
I'm through 2 seasons now.
How great is it? How great is it so far?
It's good.
Yeah, good.
This is my favorite way to watch a show. I like to do it all at once over a period of a couple months.
Of course.
And really get invested in it. Really feel like you know what's going on, as opposed to having to remember all those details from week to week, which with this particular show would be very difficult. I watch with subtitles on, and I still can't keep track of names.
That's impossible.
It's a challenge. So I don't know how I'd be doing it if I was watching it every week, you know?
No.
Once a week.
You have people reminding you about things. Oh, yeah. The most important part of Game of Thrones is previously on Game of Thrones. But after like 2 or 3 seasons, I'd say you'll get a much better feel for the characters. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Skip season 7. It's hot garbage, but we're excited for season 8. All right, so any spicy ad drops, or we can move on. We can look at the most added list if you'd like.
I mean, I'm kind of with you where Yandy, like a guy who's 50% owned, Yandy Diaz, wasn't available in any of my leagues. And I feel like that's always the problem with this segment every week, is that the kind of leagues we play in, the potential ads are less exciting than I think the average person is dealing with.
So let's talk about Yandy Diaz. And, you know, off to an incredible start. He's now 53% owned. He's the 5th most added player. He is third base eligible. And do they play him anywhere else? I'll take a look and see if he's made any other.
Yeah, they played him at first base some.
Okay.
Could get first base.
So Diaz is batting .303 with 3 home runs, 5 walks, 3 strikeouts. Just really impressive. And, yeah, seems to be playing every day, I think, for the Rays. I have trouble keeping up with that, but
pretty much,
he's their best hitter. So, yeah, 53% owned, and any third baseman that you've moved him ahead of in your rankings?
I think he's the perfect pickup for people who are thinking they may have lost Miguel Andujar for the season, because I think it could be similar production. Actually walks more than Andujar, so maybe even better in points leagues. But that's the ideal guy, and I wasn't able to do it in the one league where I owned Andujar, which was disappointing. Chris Towers already had him. But, I mean, what he's doing differently this year, because 3 home runs, he only had 1 and I think about 250 at bats between two seasons with Cleveland. He's already up to three now, but he had really high exit velocity in his time with Cleveland, just didn't elevate enough to turn that into home runs. It seemed like an overly simplistic explanation. Oh, this is what the Rays are going to try and do with him now that they got him. Get trading Jake Bowers, who was considered a really good prospect. It was surprising they made that trade. The explanation to me seemed a little overly simplistic, but so far it's manifesting as well as it could. And the guy doesn't strike out much and draws his share of walks. So if he has power to boot, then he's going to be a must-start hitter, I think.
All right, would you take Yandy Diaz over, say, Josh Donaldson or Max Muncy?
No. Okay. No, those both have to be bad for like 6 weeks before I give up on them. And by the way, Muncy really turned things around already, that series in Coors Field, where on Friday he homered. He started against a lefty and homered off that lefty. And then later in the game, he tripled off a lefty reliever. So yeah. Dave Roberts needs to get with the program. Max Muncy, one of your better bats against left-handed pitchers, Dave.
Also, Max Muncy's made two appearances at second base. Got an email from Ross alerting me to that. So thank you, Ross, for alerting me to that. All right, would you move Yandy Diaz ahead of Yoan Moncada, Asdrubal Cabrera, Michael Franco? All, you know, Moncada now has third base eligibility. Where does Diaz stack up with Yoan Moncada, Asdrubal Cabrera, Michael Franco?
I'd be fine moving him ahead of Franco and Cabrera. I think that the upside's limited for both. But Moncada's shown us big things, too. I think he actually leads the majors in average exit velocity, and his strikeout rate's way down. Yeah, guy who struck out like 33% of the time in the past, and the batted ball data was good even then. We had said before, if he gets that down to like 25%, that strikeout rate, he could be really good. It was 25% in the spring, and it's even lower, I believe, now. So I'm pretty excited about Moncada. This might be a breakout season for him.
Okay, we're going to take a look at the most added list in a second. Right now, though, I want to remind you, one of our favorite times of the year is upon us. It is Masters Week. It's a tradition unlike any other. CBS Sports is where you can get direct streaming access on your phone or computer to live coverage all day for each round of the tournament. And the coolest part is you can choose between four different streams, whether you want to watch the featured groups of the day, follow the field as they come through Amen Corner or holes 15 and 16, or see top golfers getting ready for their round on the practice range. And the best part is it's entirely free. No need to pay a subscription or have an expensive cable package to watch it. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone or visit cbssports.com/masters-first-cut. And while you're there, check out our friend Kyle Porter, golf analyst for CBS Sports. He's on the First Cut podcast. Make sure you listen to the podcast, by the way. He'll be on CBS Sports HQ. That's our free 24-hour sports news network. And he'll be reporting live from Augusta National all week long. So again, you get the CBS Sports app or you go to cbssports.com/masters-first-cut. Let's take a quick break here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Take a look at the most added list when we come back.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on fantasy baseball today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Take a look at the most added list, Scott White. Here we go. Number one. Oh, number one is fun. So this sucks. Max Fried is the most added player. He's up from 11% to 53% owned. He's going to get crushed this week. At Colorado and home against the Mets, I believe. I know the second start is the Mets. I never remember if it's home or away. Like, that's... He's going to get crushed, and then he's going to get sent down.
Yeah.
And like, it's not fair. He shouldn't skip him against Colorado. He's not ready for it yet. And then,
well, look,
boost his confidence.
I'm not, he's beyond the threshold of two-star pitchers that I'm advising this week, even in a points league. But if he doesn't get crushed at him.
He will.
Then, well.
No, I just kidding.
Maybe not.
He may not.
If he doesn't, you'll be glad you already have him, because that will be, he'll be looking like, he'll be everybody's favorite pickup at that point, still available in half of all leagues. But you're right that, I mean, if he doesn't go well, the Braves could easily pull a swap here. They actually, Mike Soroka made a start at AAA. I think he pitched 5 perfect innings coming back from shoulder injury. So he's going to be back in the discussion here soon.
Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, any Braves pitcher who holds that 5th spot, assuming the top 4 are healthy, it looks like Sean Newcomb is still among the top 4 after he pitched 7 strong against the Marlins yesterday.
Yeah, why couldn't Fried pitch against the Marlins? Are you kidding?
No, I mean, he struck out 2 in those 7 innings, so I'm still not high on Newcomb, but he has a clear advantage over all the other young pitchers because he's held down a rotation spot for a full season before. And I think it'll take a lot for him to lose that job. But anyone in the 5th spot, it would be a Fried, be it Soroka eventually, or Kyle Wright. They're at risk of being replaced at any point because there's like 2 rotations worth of major league ready pitching prospects that the Braves can cycle in to that spot.
Okay, I guess as the Max Fried owner and fan, I just have to root for everyone else to get injured. No problems there. taking more looks at the most added list, Scott. Trey Mancini, 81% owned. Matt Shoemaker, 76% owned. Christian Walker, 51% owned. Jake Lamb is out 6 weeks. Yandy Diaz, 53%. Jordan Zimmerman, 2-start week. Good matchups, 58%. Colton Wong, 83%. So I see people are buying into Trey Mancini and Colton Wong. Are you?
Well, Mancini is among my top 10 sleeper hitters for this week. The Orioles are going against the Blue Jays and Red Sox staffs in 7 games. Porcello looks like a favorable matchup right now. Chris Sale, I guess you'd have to call him a favorable matchup right now. So it looks like a good week for the Orioles. And Mancini, it's really early. You don't want to read into batted ball data too much, but he is elevating the ball much better than ever before, which is something that he really needs to do to take the next step. I think the hitting skills are good, but if he can hit fly balls like a normal power hitter, he could end up being a surprising contributor in fantasy this year. So I added him in a couple leagues myself.
Okay.
The fact that he's an advisable starter this week obviously contributed to that.
Would you rather have Jay Bruce or Trey Mancini?
I'd rather Bruce.
Would you rather have...
Bruce is also in the top 10 sleepers hitters. He's 2nd, as a matter of fact, behind Diaz.
Oh, okay, cool. Jay Bruce or Christian Walker?
Bruce.
Would you start Jordan Zimmerman this week? He's got the Indians and the Twins.
Yes, he's among the advisable 2-start options, mostly for that Indians matchup. But he may have reinvented himself here in his mid-30s, and I could see him being useful even beyond this week. If he gets crushed this week, obviously you move on, but there's a chance he might be pretty good this year.
And that's Zimmerman we're talking about. And Zach Eflin is someone we didn't mention as a standout, but he certainly stood out. Gave up 1 run against the Twins. Should have probably been 2 runs, but runner got thrown out at home plate from left field, which is actually significant because one of the reasons we like the Phillies guys is their defense is so much better this year. There's no way Rhys Hoskins was throwing a runner out at home plate. Well, probably not. But, you know, that helped. So Eflin has had 2 very good starts, and he's now 82% owned. He's up, I think he was 79% owned yesterday. He's definitely someone if he were available. Like, Scott, all the pitchers we've talked about, I'm not sure there's one that I like better than Eflin. When you look at the Marlins guys, the Brewers guys, when you look at Jordan Zimmerman, Matt Boyd, who I know you like a lot, Carlos Rodon, Matt Shoemaker, I think Eflin would be my favorite. In fact, I would say Eflin would be my favorite.
I wouldn't agree with that. I would take the best three of the Marlin Stallions, which excludes Alcantara for me. I would take Corbin Burns. I would take Brandon Woodruff. It's mostly an upside thing. I question Eflin's. Like, I think he could be a perfectly fine mid-grade starting pitcher. But he doesn't really have that big standout pitch that's going to help him pile up a lot of Ks. And, you know, a big reason for his jump in production last year, which still ended up with pretty high ERA, should point out. But a big reason for it was a jump in fastball velocity. And it's been a little down this year. It hasn't been quite as good. It was better in the second start than the first.
Well, yeah, I mean, what do you expect? Come on, it's April. You guys aren't throwing their hardest right now. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Again, mostly it's an upside thing. And actually, Corbin Burns is worth talking about here because he had a bad start. Would be probably the best way to describe it. Three home runs in a second straight outing. That's not good. He's not going to be able to get away with that. But he once again showed a really dominant fastball. Seven swinging strikes just on the fastball, which is a very high number for a fastball. And this kind of, I think this stat comparison kind of sums up the difference between how he's looked and how he's performed. His FIP this year, with all the home runs, is 840. Obviously not good. His xFIP, 194.
Yeah. All right. So Burns, I've had a chance to watch both of his starts. I watched a lot of the first one and some of the second one, and I still have the same concerns. I brought it up. It's those middle innings, third time through the order. He's a two-pitch guy, and I think his fastball gets less effective. Most pitchers do as he gets deeper into the game. Is he just building up the arm strength because he wasn't a starter last year? I don't know, but I'm
well. I looked at his pitch selection was different in this second start because I worried that, okay, maybe it's left-handers crushing him. I think two of the three home runs in this weekend start were against left-handers. One a switch hitter, obviously batting left-handed, but he did throw a changeup in this start when he didn't in his first start. That's the most important pitch for neutralizing opposite-handed hitters. There, it's more than just two pitches.
Yeah, but how? I mean, he didn't really throw it that much, did he? I mean, third time through the order right now, opponents are hitting 500. It's they're very few because he hasn't gone that many. But so far, he's getting crushed in the middle innings. So look, I haven't dropped Burns in the one league I own him in because I see the same things you see. There's a lot of encouraging stuff here for Burns, but I keep bringing it up. He didn't start last year, and we don't know how he's going to do it. Third time through the order. And so far he has failed the test. And I really think he's losing his stuff third time through the order, but that's just, you know, good old Adam Azer trying to observe baseball, which is always risky. But the stats do back it up in this case. He's losing
so
his
far.
Stuff.
There are two starts.
I don't think you can start him right now.
The Brewers take on it for what it's worth. Craig Counsell says they're committed to him as a starter. They think he's awesome. And they're scratching their heads over the home run situation right now. So they're looking for solutions to that. We'll see what they come up with. But I think the upside is very high for Corbin Burns.
You're 100% right about that. I mean, just the strikeouts are great. I think you got to sit him at the Dodgers this week, though. It's just the Dodgers are the lineup right now that you do not want any part of. And maybe after the Dodgers might be the Mariners. But right now the Dodgers, just forget it. Okay, big news. Clayton Kershaw could rejoin the rotation Sunday. Don't start him. Jeremy Jeffress could be back this week, Scott. Jeremy Jeffress, must-add guy. Let me look up his ownership percentage. What do you think?
Yeah, pretty close. I think there's a chance he is almost a true closer for Milwaukee. I was actually encouraged by the fact Josh Hader, I think it was just yesterday, he pitched 2 2/3 innings for a save. So clearly not a normal closer workload, despite all the saves he's been racking up. They still seem to like him more in a multi-inning role. If Jeffress is the main guy in that bullpen, Hader will still steal saves, but I think it would be more like a 75-25 situation than some of the 60-40 ones we're seeing across the league. Of course, it all depends on if Jeffress comes back looking like the guy he was last year, and and deserving of those save opportunities.
Sure. Other than 2017, Jeremy Jeffress has been a pretty good reliever, if not very good. I don't think he's a great whip guy, but he's a good reliever. And he's 38% owned. That is an under-owned player in Jeremy Jeffress. Chris Sale is having today's start pushed back to tomorrow. That had been the plan all along, according to Alex Cora. Baltimore signed Dan Straley. I don't know why that's in the big news section. Gregory Polanco began a rehab assignment. So that is someone that you might want to get on your bench. And Miguel Sano could begin a rehab assignment this week. Who's a better stash, Gregory Polanco or Miguel Sano?
I'm going Polanco. Sano, he needs to make a lot more contact for me to have any hope for him.
Ryan McMahon is on the IL with an elbow strain. Garrett Hampson, Scott, is 2-for-24 with no walks and 8 strikeouts. Garrett Hampson. And also Rockies news, David Dahl left with, I think, an oblique injury last night. He hurt himself swinging, and he says he thinks it's minor, but you never know with that stuff. But how much do you think okay, Garrett Hampson, is he a must-own? Let's put it that way.
It's probably a little strong at this point, but the opportunities for playing time are as high as they've been all year. So if you have faith in the skill set, and I do, you probably need to own him, particularly in leagues where you need stolen bases. At, you know, it's one of the categories as opposed to like a points league. It probably needs to be owned, but I get it if you have a lot of options in your infield and don't really have room for him in your lineup, why you wouldn't roster him. And there's obviously a roster crunch this time of year when the potential breakouts haven't, the true breakouts haven't distinguished themselves from the potential ones yet.
All right, that's Garrett Hampson, 42% owned. Mike Clevinger left with upper back tightness. Doesn't seem to be a concern. He said it was just precautionary. And Yasiel Puig got ejected on Sunday. Chance he gets suspended. We'll see, but then he'll appeal it. So I don't think there's an issue starting Yasiel Puig. How about
Mike Clevinger, by the way, has
good
been
start.
Ridiculous
good
so
start.
Far. Ridiculous. I think it's worth pointing out.
Would you rather have Clevinger or Kershaw?
Clevinger at this point. I mean, he looks like he's taking that next step into being an ace. He worked on adding velocity this offseason. And while his velocity was already pretty good, it is up a tick. And I think the main thing that stands out for me for Clevinger, I talked about how 7 swinging strikes on the fastball for Burns was a really good number for a fastball. Mike Clevinger has gotten 12 swinging strikes just on his fastball in each of his first two starts, which is a ridiculous number for a fastball. If he can induce the number of whiffs on that pitch, you know, with, forget the ones he's getting on a secondary stuff, which normally generate the big whiffs totals. I mean, he's going to be a strikeout machine this year.
Yeah, and I think he's either got Detroit or Kansas City this week. Chicago, he's faced the White Sox and the Blue Jays. I would say the White Sox are not necessarily a layup, but the Blue Jays might be the worst lineup in baseball right now, and he completely dominated both those teams. He will dominate either Detroit or Kansas City, whoever he gets this week. That's Mike Clevinger. Okay, Scott, people want one-star streamers. Scott White hates one-star streamers, but I've got a list for you of guys that you could use for just one start. And I will remind you, Scott and everybody, one-star streamers, this segment last year, this five-star reviewed segment, was probably the first time that I seriously talked about Erman Marquez last year. Because at one point, Erman Marquez was just like, whoa, he's doing really well on the road. So I said, pick him up. He's got a road start. But, you know, then he ended up being great. So here we go. So owned in a lot of leagues, and we'll go down in ownership. Zach Eflin is at Miami this week. His two starts after that are probably going to be at Colorado and at the Mets. That could be tough. But one start, Zach Eflin at Miami. Yes, sir. Michael Pineda has Detroit this week, and he's 73% owned. He's still not going more than 5 innings, not throwing a ton of pitches, but maybe they're just building him up. What about Pineda in a one-star week, Scott White?
I'd be okay with it, you know, as one-star streamers goes. My opposition to one-star streamers is that you're having to turn to them. You obviously don't have a very good pitching staff because I usually find it's hard enough to fit two start streamers in with the one start pitchers I like. But, you know, Pineda's looking like a must-own pitcher. My concerns about him maybe being the Twins maybe trying this weird new piggyback approach with him so he doesn't have to face the lineup the third time were, they were kind of relieved with his start this weekend where he pitched five innings and was followed by 4 1 inning relievers. So hopefully they're just stretching him out carefully because of Tommy John, and that's why he went 4 innings and threw hardly any pitches in that first start.
I disagree with Scott White that you have to have a bad pitching staff. Like, I'm looking at one of my pitching staffs right now. And granted, like, I have Severino, and this is a 14-team league. But a lot of people play in these types of leagues. But I have Bauer, I'm starting him. I have Castillo, I'm starting him. I have Charlie Morton, I'm starting him. But I also have Tyler Skaggs. Tyler Skaggs is at the Cubs this week. And I'm going to sit Tyler Skaggs for Zach Eflin, who's at the Marlins. I also have Domingo Ramon, who has the White Sox at home this week. There's a chance that he doesn't make that start, as I was reading this morning, because Sabathia is coming back.
Yeah.
So, you know...
But in a 14-team league, Adam, Zach Eflin's not a guy you're picking up off waivers.
Okay, in my podcast league, 12-team league, I bet if I had Zach Eflin there, I would start him over Vince Velasquez making two starts this week. Or Tyler Skaggs or Jordan Zimmermann. Oh my God, my pitching staff is so bad in this league. So I guess, yeah. Some people have bad pitching staffs. How about Sonny Gray?
Some do. Yeah.
One start for Sonny Gray against the Marlins this week, coming off a very good start.
Sure. He looked much better in his second start. That slider that he says ruined him with the Yankees because they wanted him to throw a slider more. It was his fourth most used pitch in that second start, so he seems to be backing up what he was saying. And I think he could be a useful starter this year.
Derek Rodriguez, 61% owned. Yeah, I don't know. He kind of failed his audition. Although he allowed 4 runs in the first inning and then just 4 runs over 5 1/3. Derek Rodriguez has San Diego at home this week. Yanni Chirinos is at Toronto this week. That could be a great one. Jake Odorizzi got crushed over the weekend, but he's got Detroit this week. And I just don't trust Jake Odorizzi. But he did get crushed at Philadelphia.
It's worth pointing out that it was like wet conditions and he said he couldn't get a good grip on the ball, but I wasn't buying into that first start for Odorizzi anyway, where he struck out 11.
Yeah, but Toronto is Chirinos' matchup, and Yanni Chirinos, that one might work, 39% own. Montas is at Baltimore. Yeah. Frankie Montas at Baltimore, and then Mike Leake is at Kansas City. Now you gotta check that one, cause if he gets pushed back, he's got Houston at home. But Mike Leake is 13% owned, and I think he's better than that. So I'm not saying he's a mixed league guy, but 13% owned, I bet you could do worse than Mike Leake. Okay, more importantly, how about some pitchers that we might be looking to drop right now, Scott? I'm going to give you some big names. These guys are owned in a lot of leagues. The first three are owned in about 90% of leagues. Rick Porcello, Jose Quintana, and John Gray. And then I'll give you the two Brewers guys, although you're not dropping the Brewers guys, I'm guessing. Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff. But how about Porcello, Quintana, and Gray? Are you ready to drop them?
I think in like a head-to-head categories league where roster space is limited and volume from pitchers isn't as important as like in a points league, I think you could think about dropping Porcello or Quintana, provided it's a situation where there's so many good options emerging on waivers and you're struggling to find a spot to fill them. You know, it's part of the game in those leagues is giving yourself a chance to drop somebody. And I think both of these pitchers, Porcello and Quintana, in that format have given you a chance to drop them. It doesn't mean I think they're ruined. It doesn't mean I think this is just who they are now and we're moving on from them forever. I just think, first of all, they're probably not going to be picked up if you drop them. And second of all, I don't think the upside is high enough that you're really going to miss them in that format. Now, in a points league scenario, again, that would also mean small roster sizes where you're struggling to pick up everyone you want off waivers. But it's different because of the hope that they give you at least six innings a start. I think Porcello and Quintana, that's still the most likely outcome for them. So I'd be reluctant to drop them in that format. No way I'm dropping John Gray. His first start was great. He's got a lot of upside. Wish the second start was better, but whatever. That happens. I mean, Dodgers, a lot of pitchers, even a lot of aces, have had a bad start already.
Yeah, and against the Dodgers in Coors Field is kind of tough for him. Porcello, you know, I read the recap from the Boston Herald, and they pointed out there was a lot of bad luck for Porcello. I'm not going to read all of it, but it didn't have to be as bad as it was, which was 7 runs in 4 2/3 on 10 hits. I mean, it wasn't going to be good, but his start could have been better. And still waiting for one really good start from a Red Sox pitcher this year. All right, so those are some pitchers to drop. We got a lot more to talk about and not that much time, so we'll get through it fairly quickly, and we're coming right back after this is our final break of the show. We'll be right back.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, Scott, here we go. Any other hitters you want to talk about? I mean, gosh. Mike Trout's homered in 4 straight games. That's cool. Jorge Alfaro homered twice. Max
yes.
Kepler. I know you like Max Kepler, or last year you did. He's homered in 3 straight games.
Yeah. No, he's interesting because he's shown good strikeout to walk ratios in the past and actually made some encouraging strides in terms of elevating the ball last year. It just didn't really show up in the numbers. So him homering in 3 straight games, you know, I was picking up like Jay Bruce over him, but Kepler, in leagues where I needed an outfielder, usually only like 3 outfielder leagues where he was available, I had a few claims in for him that didn't end up going through, but he was on the list to add, sure.
Clint Frazier or Max Kepler?
Kepler.
Kepler or Jock Peterson?
I think you got to go Kepler there, unless you're talking about a one-week scenario where you just want Peterson to take advantage of all those righties. Or if you're talking about a daily league, I might go Peterson over Kepler.
Right. Okay, more hitting news. Dansby Swanson, 52% owned. He is top 6 shortstop right now. And he's batting .346 with 3 homers, but also 6 walks and 6 strikeouts. So he continues to be interesting. And also Tim Anderson's off to a big start, batting .560 right now with 2 home runs and a steal. And only 2 strikeouts for Tim Anderson, only 1 walk. But I guess when you're getting so many hits, you're not going to strike out that much. But if you were going to pick up a shortstop, would you go for Dansby Swanson or Tim Anderson?
Well, Tim Anderson's probably owned in all category leagues already, right? 5x5 leagues, just because he was a 2020 guy last year. Points leagues, he doesn't really walk enough. I still think I'd favor him over Swanson, but I don't want to bury Swanson here because there was an interesting article in The Athletic about work he did with Chipper Jones this offseason, and the Braves hitting coach Kevin Seitzer really talked about how good of a hitting instructor Chipper Jones is turning out to be and how he's just kind of picked up with Swanson where Chipper Jones left off doing the same sort of things. But in a couple places that Swanson is laying off the slider outside in a way he didn't do last year, he was often flailing at that pitch, and he's shown a greater willingness to hit the ball when it is outside and actually on the plate to hit the ball the other way. And obviously it's paying dividends so far. This guy's a former number one overall pick and top prospect. He hasn't really shown much of anything in the majors so far, but there may be something to this start. I'm not saying he's must add, but in leagues with middle infield spots, so, you know, deeper lineup leagues, I was looking to add him where he was available.
It's time to talk about starting pitchers. And I think we'll just go to the ones that are available. Although, let me go to studs being duds. Let's go to some guys who were terrible over the weekend. Tell me if you're concerned about any of these fellas. Zach Wheeler, Kyle Hendricks, Yusei Kikuchi, and Jay Happ. Wheeler, Hendricks, Kikuchi, Happ.
I'm not sure Kikuchi has shown much in terms of an ability to miss bats. This start, 10 swinging strikes, was actually his season high, which is discouraging. Not saying I'm looking to drop him, but I haven't been impressed so far. Wheeler gave up 7 walks, obviously terrible. His first start wasn't great either. But the Mets manager, Mickey Callaway, who was a great pitching coach for Cleveland before becoming Mets manager, says there's a mechanical issue where Wheeler's releasing the ball too late, holding on to it too long, and that's affecting his control. And Wheeler seems to think it's a simple fix. You know, velocity's been fine and all of that. So I'm not worried about Wheeler. I think it might be a good buy low opportunity for him.
All right, cool. And then how about I really think we should talk about Chris Paddock. Maybe today's not the day, but you know, Scott, I just have an issue with two pitchers. And I can't give Paddock a pass. Like, I'm very excited about Chris Paddock. You know, his last start, it wasn't that bad, but he only pitched 3 2/3. He gave up an unearned run, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts at St. Louis. His first start was really good. But, yeah, I mean, eventually that stuff kind of catches up to you if you only have two pitches. And when I looked at Chris Paddock's minor league numbers, I figured he threw like 98 miles per hour. He doesn't. I think he's probably more like 95, which is really good. But it's not like he has one pitch that looks so amazing. Maybe the changeup. I don't know. But all I'm saying is, there's very few right-handed pitchers who can survive with two pitches. And we have to point that out on Paddock.
Yeah, I think it's going to be more of a situation where they don't let him pitch the third time through the lineup very often, which he needs for arm preservation purposes anyway. Guy who was coming back from Tommy John surgery last year, didn't have a huge total number of innings in the minors. I think he's going to be dominant those first two times through the lineup. That'll give you really good ratios. The 4 walks in this start was an aberration. He had 3, I think, total this spring, and he had 8 total in the minors last year. Right. Granted, it wasn't a full minor league season, but it was a bunch of starts. So he's normally a much better control pitcher than he showed yesterday.
Yeah, Paddock is at Arizona this week. I'm hoping that's an opportunity for him to, you know, be great. And if he is great, then I might consider making offers, seeing if I could get a more solidified starter who's going to get me innings, going to, you know, be available the entire season, pending injury. So we can revisit that. All right, here we go. I'm going to give you some players. They're all owned in more than 80% of leagues, and I want you to tell me if they should be or if you think they could be dropped for anybody on waivers, hitter, pitcher, whatever. Michael Wacha, Jake Arrieta, Trevor Williams, Nick Pivetta, Marcus Stroman, Brad Keller, and Sean Newcomb. Michael Wacha, Jake Arrieta, Trevor Williams, Nick Pivetta, Marcus Stroman, Brad Keller, and Sean Newcomb. Anyone there that the first to go, I got no problem dropping these guys, this guy or these guys.
For me, the first to go would be Newcomb. Totally fine dropping him. Again, not showing much bat missing ability and control issues. So that's totally fine with that. Trevor Williams, I think the upside is limited. Jake Arrieta at this point in his career, I think the upside's limited. I think he had 1 swinging strike in this weekend start, even though it was an okay start. That's not a good omen. So those would be the 3. Probably in order, it'd be Newcomb, Arrieta, then Williams. I'd be okay dropping them for whatever. Waka's right on the verge of that too. I think the upside's limited for him, but he's been a usable pitcher for a long time. So be a little more reluctant with him. But I think he is droppable if you're struggling to fit an upside-y type on your roster.
And people are worried about Nick Pivetta, Scott. Yeah, we're getting a lot of Nick Pivetta talk.
Yeah.
Not yet.
I mean, he hasn't looked great so far. And the velocity is a little down, I think. But he was probably the trendiest breakout pitcher this year. And for good reason. I mean, the supporting stats really painted a good picture for him. So he deserves He deserves more time than this.
I don't think Brad Keller should be 85% owned. I don't really think he's a categories or roto type of guy, but Brad Keller does get Cleveland this week, so you might want to hang on to him.
I mean, that's fair. He probably is in like the Trevor Williams class. I should have mentioned him.
Fringy starting
pitchers.
The main two that I
wouldn't be dropping from this group are Pivetta. And look, even Stroman, I don't think it's crazy to drop him. But I think at the very least, he's going to be an innings eater.
Okay, Fringy starting pitchers part one. These guys are 65 to 79% owned. Who do you like? Tyler Skaggs, Michael Pineda, Julio Arias, Zach Godley, Kevin Gausman, and that's it. Zach Eflin was in this group, and now he's 82% owned. Skaggs, Pineda, Arias, Godley, and Gausman.
Skaggs, Arias, and Eflin are pretty close to must-own. Arias...
Is he done, though? Is he going, Kershaw back this weekend?
Thing. I mean, the way the Dodgers handle their rotation, you know the next opportunity is right around the corner, but he struggled in a Coors Field start yesterday. I don't think he's must-own, but obviously if you're in a situation where you can stash upside, he's among the most upsidey stashes. Got a visit from the cat behind me, by the way.
Oh, Tiger! Out. Tiger the fantasy cat. Welcome.
Godley, I don't know, bad control. He did lead with his curveball yesterday, which is interesting. Pitchers who are leading with the secondary pitches seem to be faring well here in the early going. Did I say yesterday? I meant this weekend.
Yeah, Friday.
And Gausman, it was a really good start. It was against Miami, threw just two pitches, and the velocity was down, I think. 11 swing strikes, which is not a bad number, but I'm not rushing to pick up Gausman based on this performance.
No, and he's at Colorado this week, so no. I'm surprised Skaggs is only 73% owned, honestly. But I think I'm going to sit him at the Cubs. They are raking. Frenchie starting pitchers part two, 50 to 64% owned. Sonny Gray, Derek Rodriguez, Steven Matz, Domingo Herman, Matt Strom, Caleb Smith. They are 50 to 64% owned. Sonny Gray, Derek Rodriguez, Steven Matz, Domingo Herman, Matt Strom, Caleb Smith.
So Caleb Smith, this is kind of the opposite order in which they're owned here. Caleb Smith, Domingo Herman, and Sonny Gray are my favorites from this group. And I think I'd own them over a lot of guys in the last group, the more owned group. I think Skaggs is in the same conversation. I think Pineda...
I need to see a lot more from Michael Pineda. I'm sorry. Like this guy, his last three seasons, he had a 437, 482, and 439 ERA. I like him this week against Detroit, but I'm not there yet. I'm surprised that Pineda is more owned than even Caleb Smith.
Caleb Smith being 50% owned is crazy to me. He needs to be, I mean, two great starts now. Matt Strom is a guy who I was excited about coming in, and I decided to drop him for the first time yesterday.
Yeah.
I dropped him, trying to remember who I dropped him for. It may have been like a two-star Zimmerman. Because his velocity is not held up moving from the bullpen to the rotation, and he's basically been going fastball slider. When a lot of the talk of moving him to the rotation is, hey, he has four pitches. This could work out great. Had a really good spring, but the first couple of starts have been very discouraging for Matt Strom.
All right, Scott, we got about a minute left. Luke Weaver, Sandy Alcantara, Wade Miley, Yanni Chirinos, Lucas Giolito, Kyle Wright, Pablo Lopez, Jake Odorizzi, Ronaldo Lopez. Frankie Montas, did I say anyone that needs to be added?
Despite the bad showing Friday, still like Pablo Lopez and Wade Miley and Yanni Chirinos are the other two interesting options here.
Adam Wainwright, deep leagues here, less than 30% owned. Most of these guys less than 20% owned. Wainwright, Merrill Kelly, Zach Davies, Wade LeBlanc, Mike Leake, Jorge Lopez, Aaron Brooks, Nick Margevichus, Trent Thornton, interesting, Tyson Ross, Lance Lynn, Felix Pena.
Yeah, very surprising. Thornton's only 9% owned. Sparp with 15 strikeouts and 10 2/3 innings so far. Needs to be more owned than that. My second favorite here is probably Kelly. And the others, they have a lot more to prove still.
Trent Thornton, Blue Jays pitcher, has some of the best spin rate on his curveball in baseball. So maybe a little bit of a sleeper there and just 8 or 9% owned. That is Scott White. I am Adam Azer. Thank you for listening, everybody. Going to read some emails on tomorrow's show, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Keep them coming. Thank you for your emails. We always appreciate it. Sorry we couldn't get to any today. That's going to do it for our Monday show. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Baseball Today.